Welcome to the Venutio Novak Report and the American Political Zone. From New York, this is Frank Venutio.
And from Washington, this is Daria Novak.
And across the country this past weekend, we had what was called the No Kings Rally. And as President Trump said, it was very successful. In fact, he said, "Thank God the rallies were successful. There's no king, and I'm still your president." Daria, what did you think about the protest?
You know, I believe everybody has a right to protest. I support it. It's a free country. As long as people are not calling for violence and it's responsible free speech, I am all for it. But, you know, Frank, let's take a look behind the scenes about actually what was happening. We saw the pictures on the internet. In some cases, we found that they were from previous rallies that people were claiming numbers from them. But forget even the pictures that tell a story that's not true. We know AI can do all kinds of things. Let's look at the government funding numbers that have come out to show the types of groups and people that were supporting the group for the rally. George Soros, as you know, contributes a lot of money. He's contributed money to groups like the American Civil Liberties Groups and others, $16 million, for instance. If we add up all the monies that George Soros has donated, and these are to groups that are funding the No Kings rally, the numbers that come out are $72,117,000. Now, you know, this is not just one person. Let's look at Rockefeller. That number comes out to over $28 million. Let's look at Buffett. His numbers come out to over $16 million. Arabella, over $78 million. Ford, over $51 million. This goes on and on. Frank, if we look at the types of groups that are supporting and getting this money that was used in the No Kings rally, American Civil Liberties Union Foundation, the Arab American Institute, Beyond the Arc, Care in Action, the Center for International Environmental Law, Common Cause Foundation. You know, this list is so long, Frank. I literally was just going through it and I thought, how do we even discuss it in a short period on the show? There are so many groups that have received funding that it used it to buy signs, to pay for labor. We've seen interviews with people that were literally paid to protest. And not only that, we've seen pictures of protesters that were in numerous cities and numerous rallies, all paid. And when the people were interviewed, they wouldn't deny that they received money. So how much money, Frank, do you think if you collectively put together just Arabella, Buffett, Ford, Rockefeller, Soros, and Tides? Well, you're going to be shocked, and I'm glad you're sitting down, Frank, because that number totals two, if I can read it with my eyes, $294+ million.
Amazing.
It is amazing. But you know what it made me think? Why are we still a more conservative country with all this money against us if we're not the majority of Americans? Because we don't spend money on protests. We may pray silently at a rally, but we're not out busting ourselves across countries. We're going to baseball games and living our lives. We're playing with our kids. We're going to work during the day. But what we're seeing on the left is a very organized fundraising effort. And it is deliberate, it is organized, and they are determined to break down the American way of life. But with almost a quarter, or over, I should say, a quarter trillion dollars, they haven't done it. That tells you how strong this country still is.
Yeah, 2 points on that. When we saw the anti-Semitic pro-Hamas riots in places like Columbia University and universities, in fact, across the nation, we saw some interesting facts. We saw those tents that went up outside Columbia University and other places, all looking exactly the same, all apparently from the same store, same model. Obviously, that was not a grassroots effort. That was a lot of money coming from outside supporting these things. When we saw over the years numerous protests, we see repeatedly that protesters are being paid to show up. want to address something else about the No Kings rally. Many years ago, when there was a Tea Party event in New York City, I happened to be in the neighborhood about 3 hours before the event was scheduled to begin. And I saw something interesting. I saw the cameras from the major networks there already filming 3 hours before the event started. And then they went on to say, in a sparsely evented Tea Party event in New York City. Well, obviously, it was sparsely evented because attended because it had not yet begun. Now let's look at some of the things that have been put on TV showing massive attendance at some of these No Kings rally. And it turns out that was AI. That was false journalism. That was all sorts of trick photography. The reason the left continues to engage in these things, false grassroots efforts financed by billionaires, false attempts to say that this is a grassroots effort, it's because they don't really have the support of the American people. The hard left supports maybe 25% of the population, if that. But they do a lot better than that at the polls. They do a lot better than that on TV in protest movements because they're paying people. Now, I want to talk a bit about where some of that money comes from. We can point to the usual suspects, and they are the usual suspects, George Soros and all those organizations, Arabella. And of course, they contribute lots of money. But there's a lot of money that is funneled through other organizations. And where do they get the money? Well, I'll tell you where they got the money, Daria. All that money that was spent for infrastructure, all that was money that's spent for climate change, and it never seems to affect the climate, and it never seems to improve infrastructure. It goes to all of these left-wing organizations who take the money and then, through a variety of schemes, funnel it to left-wing protests and causes. This has been the theft of taxpayer money. You can believe what you want, I can believe what I want, but I don't have to support your political ideas. What happens is with the theft, and I use that word in every legal sense of the word, the theft of taxpayer dollars for partisan political purposes is stealing money from taxpayers for partisan purposes. That is illegal. It is immoral. It is dead wrong. You see it in No Kings. You see it in the anti-Israel riots on college campuses. It never stops. And it is a bastardization of the concept of free speech. Because it's not free speech if I'm being forced to pay for it.
You know, Frank, you are very correct. And sometimes people doubt, and I just want to add one out anecdotal rally piece of information, if you will, that I was actually present at. This happened in Connecticut, in Hartford, Connecticut, at a Second Amendment rally. It was a few years ago. It was at the state capitol. What had happened in previous years when Second Amendment rights individuals held rallies, there was an official count by the Capitol Police that were in the legislative building who would take photographs. It might have been Park Police, I don't remember the exact group, but the police department would release the numbers at the rallies. Well, as the Second Amendment groups in Connecticut started getting stronger, as legislation became more and more restrictive against gun rights in Connecticut, all of a sudden a change took place. I was at a rally personally where I saw the media there, exactly what you said, Frank. They were filming the grounds of the Capitol a couple of hours before the rally. And of course, people were just setting up, there were tables, things were being brought in. Nobody was there listening to anyone speak. The media reported it. There weren't people at the rally. It was a total lie. There were over 5,000 people. Whoever was in the media was in cahoots with the government, the Democratic leadership in Connecticut, because all of a sudden they came up with a new rule that the police would no longer count the number of individuals at a rally. Why? In my opinion, the reason why they stopped doing this and prohibited any group from going into the Capitol to photograph above the rally what was going on outside was because we were getting large numbers of individuals there. So this is not just a simple somebody not counting the right numbers. These are organized efforts by Democratic officials in power, by the media, and by others in the left side of the political spectrum who are out there literally trying to stop people from believing that the majority of Americans do want to have the Constitution followed, our rights followed. You know, Frank, it really bothers me when I see these things organized like this. Whatever happened to just plain protests, handmade signs, people speaking out on their own? It seems to me that we've got to get back to that and get away from organized groups that are busing in people, paying protesters. It's just too much.
It is indeed. Derry, let's go to our first guest. Reggie Littlejohn is a Yale-educated attorney, human rights advocate, and president of Anti-Globalist International. And she wants to talk about the topic of how globalism has harmed America and how Americans are finally waking up to that. You know, Daria, if you recall, back in the year 2000, President Clinton signed legislation stating that, well, you know, we're going to bring China into permanent most favored nation status, and that's going to help the American worker. It turned out to be a disaster for the American worker. Let's talk about that with Reggie Littlejohn.
Great to be here.
Reggie, it's great to be with you. You know, we've seen promises of globalism, how it's going to help the American worker for years and years, decades, in fact. And indeed, rather than helping the American worker, it's been a disaster for American workers and the American economy. What say you?
I understand what you're saying, that the idea of bringing China into most favored nation status has been bad for the American worker. Another problem has been that what they did is they delinked most favored nation status from their human rights record, and their human rights record also just went right down, just plummeted at that point. But in terms of globalism and the globalist threat that I see right now is coming mostly from the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, and the United Nations. So I just got back just on Saturday from speaking at the European Parliament about the dangerous threats that are posed by the World Health Organization and especially their pandemic treaty, but also the international health regulations that they passed in May of 2025.
We've seen that the United Nations has kind of pulled back on some of their climate things lately. Why does it seem that the climate regulations or climate ideas the United Nations has all seems to be having the Western nations pay reparations for, I don't know what damage, but for reparations to third world nations or to other nations?
The whole thing about climate change, in my opinion, is a way of trying to get people to agree to have carbon tracking for nations and also for individuals, so that and the only way that they can track our carbon is if we have some kind of a digital ID that is related to all of our purchases and all of our activities. And these digital IDs, the interoperable international digital IDs that the United Nations, I think, would love to see in terms of carbon tracking, as a digital platform for the China social credit system. I mean, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the China social credit system, but any mandatory digital ID can be used in a way that's similar to the China social credit system. In other words, in China right now, they are rolling out and have rolled out in these areas of China a social credit system where they track you, have facial recognition, they have real-time geolocation, so they know what you look like, they know where you are, where you live, where you work, then tracking your bank accounts, your credit cards, all of your expenditures, your search history, your internet spending history, your criminal record, your medical record, and they put it all together and come out with a score about how reliable of a Chinese communist doormat you are. And if you never criticize the government, you get all your vaccinations, et cetera, You can lead what looks like a normal life. Don't obey. If you're not completely obedient to the government, they can punish you. And the first level of punishment would be job. If you won't be able to buy a home or start a business, you won't be able to travel. Your kid won't be able to go to private school. If you keep up your bad behavior, they will sever you from your bank account or your credit card, which if people think that that can't happen in North America, it did happen with the Canadian truckers. They were protesting against vaccine mandates several years ago. And then ultimately in China, if you keep it up, then they will just disappear you, which means that, that one day no one can find you and perhaps you're never seen or heard from again. So we don't want that in the United States. And I'm worried about and the world, the World Health Organization is rolling out these interoperable international health IDs, which could serve as the platform for the China social credit system. In the United States, thank goodness, President Trump endorsed the World Health Organization.
Reggie, one of the things that I've been following lately is AI and its impact. And one of the things that scared me about it the other day was I had been asking a few questions about some products that I was considering buying. I was talking, so to speak, to one AI program. And the next thing I know, it was all over my computer with ads, my cell phone with ads. It was making suggestions to me. The next time I got on AI, it remembered everything from the previous chat, even though I had closed down my computer and opened it up again. At this point, I am not an AI expert. I'm not an IT expert. I'm just the average American citizen. Thinking that this is going to be useful to me. How much danger is the average person in from this type of global dissemination of information? I started getting ads from Eastern Europe, Western Europe, American companies. It wasn't something limited, it was extensive. And then not only ads for products. I wonder about the consequences for health and insurance companies. I didn't do this, but if I had something like, I don't know, asthma, and I was looking for something to help my breathing, does that get spread into a medical file at some point that's accessible by insurance companies? How much danger are we in from AI and from the globalization of information?
Is AI, and as I was mentioning, this China social credit system, the whole thing is run by AI. I mean, there's not a person that is able to sort of consolidate the information of all a billion Chinese people onto their phones and having everybody have some kind of a digital profile. It has to be done through AI. One of the great sort of titans of AI in the United States is Larry Ellison, the head of Oracle, and he gave a talk at Oracle late last year where he gave his vision of what he would like to see in the United States through AI, which is that all of us would be wearing body cams at all times. Of course, there would be, dash cams on the cars, there would be surveillance cameras on the corners, there would be Ring cameras on everybody's front door. And this that everything is to do would be put into AI in real time, so that they would not be able to misbehave, and that it would put ordinary citizens on their best behavior because we would know that everything we say and everything we do is being put into AI, and that it would be if we do anything or say anything wrong. On our best behavior. And then he talked about how this would prevent mass shootings because if AI detected that there was an escalation, they could just send in drones, and drones can get there so much faster than police can. So we'd be safer from mall shootings and all this. And to me, this is incredibly dystopian and a complete loss of our freedom and our privacy. So AI. Unregulated AI poses, I think, significant dangers to our freedom.
Frank, I would love to ask you this question. Have you run into this in your life where AI gets involved in things that you really didn't think it should be involved in, where your purchasing or your medical records or things like that become involved?
Yeah, very much so. In fact, if you click, one of the more humorous aspects of it is if you click on the wrong site by accident, you're up on there on the screen, your mouse goes in the wrong direction, and you click on something, motorboats, and the next thing you know is you're bombarded in all your social media with ads for motorboats and this, that, the other thing. I'm just using that as an example, but I want to go back to the point that Reggie was making about the digital concept. The United Kingdom is about to go with a digital currency concept. That could easily come to the United States. And I think that is certainly the stalking horse for all of the dreaded concerns that you just expressed, Reggie. Do you think that Britain will go the full distance with a digital currency, and will that come to the United States?
Well, I mean, I can't predict what Britain is going to do. Boy, they're sure meeting with a lot of resistance. So thank God for the British citizens. And I know some of the leaders of the resistance over there. But in terms of the United States, President Trump has signed, I believe he signed an executive order saying that we will not have central bank digital currencies in the United States. But at the same time, he's also promoting something that is called stable coins, which are also a digital currency. And stable coins are different from central bank digital currencies, only in that a central bank digital currency is issued by a central bank, like the Federal Reserve, whereas a stable coin can be issued by a commercial bank or whoever gets permission to issue these things. And the problem with both of these is that they are programmable. Programmable. So what that means is that instead of using cash, where no one knows who's using cash for what, where, when, why, or how, it's completely private. With a stable coin or a central bank digital currency, your card to access that, they're going to know who's purchasing what, from whom, where, when, and about the transaction, and so that they can control it or manipulate it. So bringing it back to the carbon issue that you brought up earlier in the interview, say that all of us are given a certain carbon allowance. So let's say that you're allowed one flight a year because that's all they deem that people should have, and you use up your flight going to the wedding of a loved one. And then later in the year, maybe another loved one passes away, and then you try to buy the ticket for that, and you can't because you already used up the carbon credits for air travel. Or let's say that they have a quarantine. Let's say that there's another pandemic, and let's say that you refuse to be vaccinated, and so they say, okay, well, it's your choice, but you can't leave your house, right? They could program your stable coins. You can't access them if you leave the house. If so that would be another thing they could do. Or they could say, you have to use your stable coins by a certain date, or they will expire. So this is a way of complete control. It turns your spending habits into a method of surveilling you because they know exactly what you're buying, where and when. And also of totalitarian control because they can control every minute purchase that you make or even just shut off your stable coins and your bank accounts like they did to the Canadian truckers several years ago. It's just, you think that this should be unthinkable, but it actually did happen in North America.
Reggie, you mentioned the word control. And while you were speaking, all that went through my mind on almost every sentence was control, control over the population. When you look at socialist systems, when you look at big government, all that I see is a destruction of the Bill of Rights, a taking away of our individual freedoms. And it seems that when you have these type of controls over a population, it does make it entirely possible to control the direction of policy, not just an individual person's bank account, even, but who are the powers that are behind all of this? It seems, in a way, it's very organized.
You know something that is like the better question, and I don't think that anyone can necessarily name these people. But one person said, if you can name them, then they're not the one who's in power. Right? I think that these people are behind the scenes, but
It has been a fascinating conversation, and we hope to continue it in the future. Thank you very much for being on the Venutio Novak Report.
all right, thank you for having me.
You know,
You
Frank,
know,
I
in
have,
China, go on.
if I could just bring this up about technocracy, I am not somebody that sees a problem under every rock. I try to be pretty balanced in my thinking, but this scares the bejesus out of me. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that word on air, I suppose so these days. But when I look at the technology, I don't have control over my own life. It seems that the more we become technical, yes, it can help speed things up a little bit, but it also seems like it's diminishing my rights as an individual.
Well, it certainly is. And we hear talk about approaching the singularity where people no longer have control over their own destinies, where it's handed over to computers. And of course, the computer, not even trying to be maliciously programmed, but nevertheless, without an understanding of human incentives, can make really bad decisions. You know, the old joke goes, it's to err is human, to really screw up takes a computer. And I think that is going to be something we're going to learning again the hard way within the next few years. I want to say something else about digital currency. In addition to its ability to control the population, it's also a way of mass theft. You know, there is no stabilization with a digital currency. Just like with the meme coins and things of that sort, you know, when you have a currency, the concept is there's something behind it. There's either gold at Fort Knox or the full faith and credit of the nation issuing the currency. With these digital currencies, there's really no there. And if some malicious organization or malicious party gets in control and decides to screw around with the population as a whole, they could simply devalue it. You could have $1 million in digital currency, which could go wind up being worthless the very next day. And I think we really need to be careful that anything that replaces actual true currency based on gold or silver or the full faith and credit of the issuing nation is a really bad idea.
I agree with you, Frank. And as we move through the last couple of years, I think this is a growing problem. When we look at the people, for instance, who attended Davos, and we look at Bilderberger Group and some things, people that used to say, oh, none of this is possible, are starting to really come around and recognize it. And I think when it hits the average American and they see how interconnected we are with the world and how little freedom we have, I think that it's going to change. I don't know if it's going to mean the end of the internet or how this is going to work. But when you think about, let's just look at the food supply. If you go to the grocery store, you need to use digital card half the time to pay for your groceries, or if you go to buy gas for your car. What happens if that is wiped out, that ability to get hold of your money? I don't think the average American today is prepared to live on their own for any extended period of time to deal with what could happen. And you know what? It's not unfair, I don't think, to say that we need to be prepared. I don't mean we all go build bunkers and hide in a hidey hole all day long, but we do need to be prepared. What if the system goes down? Now, if I just look at the past week or so, we've had Amazon Web Services have a major outage of the internet. And you may not think that it impacts everything. You can say, oh, I'll just buy my Amazon product a little later. Doesn't work that way. At my university where I'm teaching, all of a sudden, all the computers went down because of their involvement. We saw that flights at airports in many cases over the past week or two have been canceled due to disruptions with computers. The more that we get into this digital world, I think the less safe we are. Never mind, whether it's things like invasive species with globalism coming into the world or pandemics or things. We have to be prepared. And Frank, I don't think we are.
No, we're not. But let's even look at further in that. If you have a digital currency, well, the powers that be might decide that you shouldn't use your currency to support the opposition political party. Think about that. This is a real doorway to disaster, and I don't think we've understood as a society how far we're going down this rabbit hole. We're seeing a lot of opposition in the UK, and thank God for that. Nevertheless, we saw what happened in Canada, as Reggie mentioned. So it has occurred in North America. It could still get even further on if our eyes are blind to what the dangers are.
I don't know how we turn it around, though. How do we capture, or recapture, I should say, control over our own lives? We are being forced into many of these systems to use them. I know you're talking digital. I just want to say one second on medical health records. They're everywhere. Doctors can access things. What about when a doctor writes down, oh, they smoked a cigarette? That follows you around. And now, whether it's insurance that may not help you, or whether it's a presumed illness due to the fact that the person smoked a cigarette or not, again, I'm not condoning smoking, but when you have such lack of control over information about you, whether it's your finances, your healthcare, your family, educational information, it's a rather scary proposition. And I don't know how we turn it back and retake control over our lives, but still can live in a digital world to some degree.
Yeah. Well, one thing, of course, is that never eliminating the viability and the use of actual currency. That kind of is the foundation of a lot of things. The ability to simply spend a dollar as a dollar is vitally important. It's the ultimate independence. It prevents the government from really taking a lot of control. Unfortunately, you see a lot of places that say they don't take currency anymore. They only want a credit card. Now, I have nothing against credit cards. I certainly use them. But a dollar being a dollar is the basis of independence for each individual. And it's something that I think we have to be on guard against. We also, again, take a look at what happened in Canada. The fact of a government going into your finances because they disagree with something that you did is absolutely outrageous. And yet it's becoming more and more of an accepted practice. In the United States, we've seen instances where the government will accuse someone of a particular type of crime and say that they can confiscate the property based on that accusation before a trial is even held. We've seen people lose cars and homes and things of that sort. Now, in the ultimate, if you are convicted of using a car, say, to sell drugs and losing that car as part of your conviction, that's one thing. But when the government, in many cases, impounds a vehicle or impounds a home based on an accusation, that's something else again.
What happens to the security if we use digital currency? What if we're hacked? Do we just lose our treasure?
Look, I don't want to sound like I guess my ancestors who came over to this country and put the money they made under the mattress, but there's something to be said for having control of your currency in the final analysis. And you're absolutely right. If they can do that, what else can they do?
Well, let's look at cyber attacks, phishing scams, and fraud. If you look at those three areas, it's billions of dollars that have been lost. So we're not talking about something that is just theoretical. It actually happens.
Indeed. Darn, let's go to our next guest. Corinne Clifford is an independent journalist based in Washington, D.C., and a prominent member of the White House Press Corps. Corinne, welcome to the program. Corinne, welcome to the program.
Can you hear us, Corinne?
Testing, testing.
Okay, great. Welcome.
Thank
I'm guessing that you're not too thrilled with Katie Porter.
you. I'm from California, and so Katie Porter is shocking to me. There is no way that she can win. I think she's just getting publicity for herself right now, but the manner in which she's behaving is like the typical Democrat. And California, unfortunately, people think it's Democrat, but really, honestly, it's not. Los Angeles County has the most registered Republican voters. We just need people to get out and vote this time.
Let me hate to stretch this example a bit. You have Katie Porter, who was at one point the front runner in California. In New York City, you have Mamdani, who's an outright anti-Semite, outright communist or socialist at least, running against Andrew Cuomo, who left office in disgrace for a sex scandal, and who was responsible for the death of thousands of senior citizens during the COVID strike. Why does the Democratic Party have even a measure of control any longer, either on the state or national level, when they keep putting unacceptable candidates or candidates of dubious quality up over and over again?
Sadly, my own mother, who currently lives in Manhattan, is voting for Mamdani. So this is the situation we're having. People want the socialism. People want to live off the government. We are losing the American dream. We are losing free market capitalism. I'm censored. I just got banned on Instagram 5 days ago, and I work in the White House press corps. So why would I ever get banned by Instagram when Mark Zuckerberg promised President Trump he wouldn't censor us anymore on Meta? So we have a lot of issues going on, but I think that Americans, especially older Americans who are going into their retirement, who really want the government to take care of them, and I think that we need to really inspire entrepreneurialism and free market capitalism with Generation Z.
We have seen on a number of occasions people vote for the most hideous candidates. And I know I'm being somewhat biased there, but the reality is, it seems if you have that Democrat label, you can put up Genghis Khan on the Democrat Party and he'd get the majority of registered Democrats. Why is that?
Okay, so Frank, I'm going to tell you the truth. I hope you can handle it. Election corruption is real, and I'm not talking about anything airy-fairy. I'm talking about basic electioneering, where the person who's a Democrat who's already in power is using U.S. taxpayer dollars, is using their state, their county, their city's taxpayer dollars to promote their own election. For example, I studied Palm Beach County, Florida's election last year, and the current supervisor of elections, her name is Wendy Satori Link. She had her name on pens. She had her name on chapstick. She had her name on band-aids. And when you went to vote, she'd give it to you. Her name was everywhere. And so that's electioneering. That's very basic election corruption. And then, of course, it gets a little more wacky if you listen to what other people say. We've got Tina Peters, a political prisoner, in prison right now in Colorado because she exposed election corruption in Mesa County, Colorado. So the Democrats have mastered the art of election corruption. And that's a really big reason why President Trump won in 2024 in November, because he had people like me on the front line and he had a massive team of lawyers. You know, President Trump is so wealthy, he can afford the best lawyers. Right now, if I could afford a $1 million lawyer, I could sue Instagram and win. But the bottom line is that it's the election corruption, and everyone running for office who's on our Republican side needs to have lawyers prepared in case the elections are corrupted. I'm going to Los Angeles in December to study this with the former sheriff of LA, Alex Villanova. Election corruption is real, and my sources are 100% legitimate.
In Connecticut a few years ago, we had a candidate who took the names on a petition up to the Secretary of State's office to be allowed on a second party line, something typical that the Democrats in Connecticut do on the family party. There were so many extra names, they were correct, And yet the Secretary of State's office declined to allow it, saying that they weren't. And when that candidate asked to get a copy of the list to see what names they were not allowing to be used, the Secretary of State declined to do it. Now, we have secretaries of state all over the country. How does an individual voter who may have put their name on that petition, how does the individual in this country literally get their rights back when we see that the Democratic Party, along with much of the media, control the narrative?
I mean, I have studied Connecticut. Unfortunately, there's a gentleman in Connecticut. His name is John Flynn. He's one of the founders of the America First Movement in Connecticut. He was thrown into the Whiting Forensic Mental Hospital a couple months ago. My team, we helped him get out, which I normally don't do, but in his case, I really wanted to help him. We hired Norm Pattiz, a very famous lawyer, to do it. But Connecticut is so corrupted because you've got AG Tong and he's suing President Trump how many times a month? Then you've got Chris Murphy, who just led the No Kings protest in Washington, D.C. That's your senator. And then you have the most corrupt senator who I confronted about a month ago. Senator Richard Blumenthal is beyond corrupt. He pretends like he's so nice, and he really is a corrupt senator. How did Connecticut become the seat of corruption? I'm being told by people, I don't want to say their names, but I do care about Connecticut. I love Greenwich, Connecticut. I love your whole state. I'm being told that it's because of the hedge funds, the bankers. You know, the bankers control everything. I'm being told that money buys everything in Connecticut.
You know, we can talk about individual instances of corruption like this, but there's a more systemic version of corruption. When we see, for example, in your home state of California, the concept of ballot harvesting, it virtually guarantees that no Republican can ever win in the state of California. Isn't that part of the reason why the Democrats feel so secure in engaging in these acts of individual corruption? Because they know the systemic corruption will back them up.
Yes, 100%. And President Trump, pray to God, he'll do a brand new executive order, but he on election corruption, but he can only handle the federal government. He can't control the states. However, he can defund the states. And so we have a whole movement of independent journalists, and we are trying to make sure that Trump says it is time to go to paper ballots plus. Plus, 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 hand count the vote with viewers like yourselves in every county, every city, every state, so that it's fairly reported and accurate. Of course, same day voting, if possible, no mail-in ballots. Election corruption is real and the machines are dangerous. I'm not going to say names. I'm not going to endanger you of getting a lawsuit or me getting a lawsuit. But what I'm telling you is that I've studied election corruption for 2 years now and I'm very, very focused on it. And Connecticut is one of the worst states I've ever seen. The Democrats have figured out how to control the vote in Connecticut. So many dead people vote, so many homeless people vote. You guys know the truth about Connecticut.
You know, I do want to talk about Connecticut for 1 second, but I do think there are bigger questions. In Connecticut, in Bridgeport, Connecticut in particular, we have seen videos of police officers taking ballots out and putting them into cars at night with a pickup truck that was later in an accident and the ballots were all over the road. We've seen a Bridgeport legislator. She voted in something like 17 different polling locations, a state representative. We don't, I'm sure this goes on in other states too. But my question to you is, okay, we have these terrible problems. We need an independent press, independent journalists that can really get out there and tell the truth without owing something to some big media organization. If that is going to occur, that we have independent journalists, they need to be trained someplace. If you look at the J schools, the journalism schools in this country, do you see any that are turning out good journalists that are capable of producing unbiased stories?
No, 100% no. And my family has the Annenberg School of Journalism at USC. And so I'm writing a book about journalism. And that is such a powerful topic because it's worse in California. In California, a team of independent journalists, I'm not going to say their names and put them in more danger, but basically they caught at 5 a.m. truckers bringing in ballots that were fake, and then they exchanged them out in the main voting areas. I can't say their names because this will be exposed more in the future. But in California, pray to God that we find someone like Elon Musk to back up independent journalists like me, because we do have a team and we have people like Shiloh Marks in California who are cleaning the voter rolls. And we have people who care about California, like Mel Gibson. He cares 100%. We just need the financial backing. And that's the problem. Is that I am backed by a company named Sat123. So when I do shows like yours, I go on and I say, everyone, take the time and go to Sat123. Make sure you have a satellite phone, the Faraday bags, a bulletproof backpack. Make sure you have everything you need for an emergency. And then mainstream media fake news like Raw Story or Daily Beast or Politico is the worst. They create fake text messages about people like me who are independent journalists. They make these crazy news stories saying I'm unethical. It's just a never-ending war zone with the fake news. So if I'm in California, I expose the election corruption, you guys will listen to me. But you know, ABC, NBC, CNN, they're gonna clobber me and say I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm worthless, and people might not listen, but I think the tides are turning because people are sick of these crazy liberal Democrats like Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom controlling California because it's the fourth largest economy.
Yeah, the combination of corrupt politics and corrupt media has been devastating. But if you look at the entirety of it, between the fact that our universities are hard left propaganda centers, which have now turned out at least two generations of hard left kids because that's all they've been educated in, combined with a totally biased media, that's a hard nut to crack. We've recently seen some advances. We saw, for example, the expose about what Facebook was doing in the last election. We saw, for example, recent exposés just in the past couple of weeks about Wikipedia and how so many kids use Wikipedia as their go-to source for information. People use it like you used to use the dictionary or the encyclopedia, but now we know that Wikipedia has been totally biased and corrupted. We are making incremental progress, but is it enough? And will it be fast enough to prevent a disaster in 26 or 28?
No, it's not fast enough. And as a matter of fact, the biggest culprit is the Google search engine. I bet your shows on Rumble, your shows don't even show up on the Google search engine. For me, my Rumble shows don't show up. Truth Social, President Trump's Truth Social posts do not show up on the Google search engine. It is so shocking that only potentially Instagram and Meta show up on the Google search engine. So we have a very serious problem in the United States of America with censorship, and it is so inbred in the Google search engine and all over with these multinational corporations that really are they really are monopolies and they need to be broken up. And so that's why I'm so grateful to be on your show because you're really talking about the really serious problems we have. I pray to God, I'm not trying to be negative. I pray to God that President Trump can make the changes we need to make. I don't even think President Trump realizes that his Truth Social posts are not even showing up on the search engines. So I don't even know if he realizes the Rumble shows don't show up. I'm very concerned that President Trump doesn't understand, but I will tell him, and hopefully we can make the changes fast enough. But Senate is not confirming President Trump's nominees. So we have a huge problem.
You know, one thing that I'm seeing among my university students, at least the younger, the undergrad, lower level, is that they are more conservative. They're more independent thinkers than in the past. They question more. I start every class out or every semester out with, I'm here to teach you to think critically, not what to think. And I'm seeing students now that are actually taking me up on that. A few years ago, it was more like go with the masses, they'll follow whatever the movement was. It was like the 1960s when you would look across a campus, and from the waist down, all of the individuals that love to claim to be individuals were all wearing old blue jeans. They all looked alike. But it seems to me that that is changing today. I see a lot of my students that want to have gig jobs. They don't want to be part of the big corporate world. So I wonder if we are going to see a movement now away from some of whether it's a digital economy, the internet to some degree, and see people returning to community where there's actually people that know other live people that live near them. Do you think our society is going to start to reject some of these overlords, if you will?
We have to, because the AI is going to be out of control. This time next year, you probably won't be able to tell what news I give you. Is it real? Is it fake? I don't like AI. I'm experimenting with it right now because I'm so banned and censored on Instagram. So I'm posting AI videos just of myself to experiment with it. But the AI is going to be a major problem. So we are in a tiny little peaceful, obviously, war zone where it's the people who believe in the AI, the computers, the big cities, the 15-minute cities, the people who want to take every vaccine, and the people like us who want to move back to the farms and the small towns. We want to make sure that we own our own land. We want to go back to farming. We want to go back to small businesses. We want to be real America first entrepreneurs. And we want to rebuild the American dream, because the American dream is dying with these multinational corporations that are monopolies that dominate everything and really influence our children. So the children really have to decide. The next generation has to decide, do you want to have a real life where you know your neighbor and you make your own food and you have a water source and you can have some clean food? I was just with Secretary Kennedy last night at his MAHA meeting, and it's very serious right now. And so, children, the next generation have to make a choice. And that's why I'm so grateful that there's respectful, responsible, mentors. Mentorship of the next generation is critical and key. That's why I like to talk to the next generation as much as possible.
Our friends on the left have a saying, which I admire actually. It's think global, act local. Isn't that something we should be doing as well? Even if it's something as basic as starting your own small town newspaper, that's the best way that we can really communicate and keep from being censored, is it not?
I love that. That's so beautiful. And I think that small town newspapers are critical and key, but then people get greedy and they want to sell them to the bigger. I raised my daughter in Aspen, Colorado, and we had a small town newspaper. I knew the owner. And of course, he wanted to sell eventually, and it destroyed the whole small town newspaper. But we need to go back to the small town living, and people need to have 5, 6, 7, 10 children. I tell my daughter, I want 12 grandchildren. So we've got to go back to our basic morals, values, and ethics in the United States of America, because we have zero population growth, because we are fighting AI, we're fighting a digital currency, we're fighting a very dangerous ID that will be on your phone, potentially leading to a type of mark of the beast. So you do need to have a place in a small town where you can retreat to, where you have your satellite phone from Sat123, where you have your water source, where you have what you need to survive any emergency. And I always tell people, I'm not going to end up in a big city. I'm going to end up in a small town with a little bit of land, learning how to grow my own fruits and vegetables and potentially have a cow because I'm a carnivore, and really learn how to live off the land, which I'm from Beverly Hills, so I don't know how I'm going to do that, but that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in 5-inch heels farming, but you have to be really careful now because the chemicals are out of control. I've noticed since the US federal government shutdown that there are no chemtrails in Washington, D.C.
Very interesting. It has been a fascinating conversation. Let's do it again real soon.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Until next time, how do our people follow your work?
So you go on X at Corinne, Corinne Clifford, Clifford, with one F. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you so much. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in today.
We welcome our newest radio affiliate in Tucson, Arizona at 95.5 FM, in Provo, Utah at 90.5 FM, and in Washington, D.C. at 96.7 FM. They join Las Vegas, Nevada at 92.1 FM, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 1640 AM and 102.1 FM. Tampa, Florida, 92.1 FM. Ritchie, Florida, 88.3 FM. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 90.3 FM. Macon, Georgia, 810 AM and 98.3 FM. Boulder, Colorado, 100.7 FM. Long Beach, California, 101.5 FM. And in Pittsburgh at 107.3 FM. We're also available on AMFM247.com, iHeart, Spreaker, and the Conservative Commandos. Tell Alexa to play the program. Tune into our television show, The American Political Zone, on the AUN Network, Roku, and Public Broadcast TV. You can access either program on our website at usagovpolicy.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week. We're sponsored by the New York Analysis of Policy and Government, a division of the American Analysis of News and Media, Inc., at usagovpolicy.com and the Institute for American Politics. Email us at truthandradio@gmail.com and tune in to the American Political Zone television show, also on the AMFM247.com network.
Our producer and director is the brilliant Jeff Hansen.